Welcome to the Broad Pod, just a couple of broads interviewing inspiring women.
I'm Becca.
And I'm Jackie.
Let's get inspired together. Thank you to WKWC 90.3 Panther Radio and Derek Hancock for allowing us to use the podcast studio.
All right, Becca. So,
a little bit of an unusual.
Yeah.
Episode.
Yeah.
For us.
Yeah. It's just going to be you and I.
Yeah.
But it's a topic that's important.
I think we're enough, Jackie.
I think so too.
I think we're enough.
So, I guess in just a few days, National Infertility Awareness Week will start. And that's obviously near and dear to both of us. And just a side note, like with my business, I'll start a fundraiser where I don't know exactly. It's so funny because when I started my fundraiser, the statistic was 1 in 8 women or couples, 1 in 8 couples is, you know, goes through infertility. And so
it's got to be higher than that.
Well, I did. So I did $8 of every sale or something. Now it's down to 1 in 6. So obviously I'm not going down to $6, but I think I might actually increase like the portion this year. So I need to like look at, you know, everything, but I want to increase like how much per piece goes to the couple. But anyway, I will sell, a necklace and bracelet option, and then a portion of proceeds will be set aside for a couple. And with every purchase, you can nominate a couple that's going through infertility, and then there will be a drawing at the end. So, and Becca actually helped me 1 year with the drawing.
And that was the night that the podcast, the first conversation about a podcast
was that the
happened.
Same night? Oh,
yeah, because we went from there to a birthday dinner for Elizabeth, and then we had that conversation there.
So it's obviously important to us, and it resonates with us both. So we kind of wanted to just have like a little episode where we talk a little bit about our journey, but I'd say a lot of people have heard it. Maybe not everybody, everybody that listens, but we also just want to like share some words of wisdom or some experiences that we've had that maybe we haven't discussed before.
Well, and I think it's been really interesting because the reason I say like 1 in 8, I'm like, it's definitely more than that.
1 in 6 now.
Because what has been surprising to me about even doing this podcast is like, we didn't originally set out to do like a podcast about infertility, but it has been very surprising to me how many of the broads we have talked to who have experienced some form of infertility.
Like, I know. And we didn't know about it.
Right. We had no idea because, you know, it's just not something that maybe people talk about that much or we didn't know them during that, you know, period or whatever.
Right.
So that it's a part of so many people's stories.
Right.
And so that's one of the things I appreciate about you. One of the many things that, but like the awareness that you're bringing to it, and through your fundraiser, through your business, just your vulnerability about talking through it. And so I think it's always good for people to share their stories, and to not feel alone, during all of that. So,
so if you're comfortable, would you share like briefly about like hearing about your infertility diagnosis?
Yeah. So, I have known that I have PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, since pretty young.
Really?
I mean, young compared to what I am now, like late 20s, early
30s. Yeah. That's young.
Just like not regular cycles, all of those kind of things. And so I knew that it was always going to be just more difficult for me because I didn't have regular cycles and those kind of things. So then when Matt and I got married in 2019, I was 38 at the time, which if I were to get pregnant, it would be considered a geriatric pregnancy, which everybody was very clear to tell me that. So I went to Dr. Moore, who has been a guest of ours.
That's my doctor too.
Went to her before we even got married and just said, like, I know that this is something we're going to want to start pretty soon because of my age. And so at that point, she was like, basically, because of my age, try for 6 months. And then if after 6 months you're not getting pregnant, then we'll go from there. So 6 months of trying, nothing, and went to Dr.
Griffin.
Sorry, at Boston IVF. I'm getting sleepy. So we went to Dr. Griffin. He did some tests on me. We never even got to the part where they did any sort of testing or anything on Matt because I don't ovulate. It's called anovulation, which is a part of the PCOS, my age, just some other things. And so he broke my heart. I will never forget. Like, I can like picture his office right now and like sitting in his office and him like sort of delivering the news that his recommendation, and he was very kind in breaking the bad news to us was basically like, I could take your money. We could do like IUI and all of those kind of things. Sure. But the likeliness is so small that his recommendation is that he would spend the money on adoption or other routes to pregnancy that, and so while that was really difficult for us to hear, like what, 8 months into marriage, maybe, it sort of like, I appreciate that because then we didn't go through, unnecessary, not just like medical procedures, but also expenses because those things, they ain't cheap. And our insurance wouldn't have covered any of those things. So that's sort of my, it's like a weird, like I don't have like a specific diagnosis beyond PCOS. But
So that's it. And, I'll try to keep mine pretty brief. It's just like it's a long and confusing story, but, after similar, like after getting married, it was pretty quick. We wanted to try, went to my doctor at the time. And she said, well, let's just try like, it's like some sort of pill that helps you ovulate. I can't remember what it is. It's something that should be like pretty easy for a lot of people. It does work. It's like you literally take the pill. You have sex and then hopefully, you're pregnant. Well, I actually never had a period. You had to like wait till you had a period. Like it took me off birth control or whatever. And you had to wait till you had a period. And I never had a period. I was like, I'm waiting. And it was going and going. And so she was like, that's interesting. Let's bring you back in for some tests. And so they did some tests. And I will never forget that they called me. This office called me at 8 a.m. on a Monday morning. Okay. Well, I'm at work. I worked at OCTC. I was getting ready to put a bunch of, I think it was middle schoolers, on a bus to the Corvette Museum. And they called me and they said, hey, we have your test results back and you are actually postmenopausal and your FSH is 168. It's basically saying like, I am postmenopausal. Like I will not be able to conceive. And they called me at 8 a.m. on a Monday morning to tell me this.
By the way, girl, and over the phone.
Shock. Like obviously they just basically said like, it's likely not going to be possible for you to have children. We're going to have to like maybe send you on to like an infertility doctor. And I'm like, you're telling me this at 8 a.m. on a Monday morning while I'm at work? Like it just, over the phone. It really hurt.
I mean, like that
it
might
hurt.
Be a conversation.
I wish they would have been a little bit more thoughtful in their delivery or their timing or like, hey, we'd love to talk to you. Is this a good time? Like we have something that you may need to sit down and listen to or whatever. So I didn't go back there, but I was pretty upset and, I was beside myself. I immediately called Zach and my mom, next and just was like, they just told me I'm postmenopausal. I was 20. I can't remember how old I was when we got married, 26, 27, 28, somewhere in there. And, it was devastating. And then from there we went to several different infertility clinics and I was diagnosed with premature ovarian failure. And so that's just, you lose the function of your ovaries. Like my ovaries do not work anymore. I remember that doctor at the time recommended me to a doctor in Nashville and I was there and the lady, I'm like still mind blown by this, but I told her, I was like, I've had, night sweats for a long time. Like that, and that's unusual, for someone my age and like hot flashes and stuff like that. She was like, oh, you probably just have too many covers on you at night. I was like, you're the infertility doctor that was recommended to me. And you're telling me I have too many covers on. And then of course they figured out I had premature ovarian failure, but I was so like grossed out by that. I was like, why am I here? Right. What is happening?
Oh my gosh.
So I didn't, needless to say, I didn't go back to her either. But I'm sure she's wonderful. And I'm sure that other doctor in their office is wonderful.
We're not naming names. You don't have to say those things.
It's just not good. Yeah. It wasn't a good experience for me personally. So ended up at a different place in Evansville. And Dr. Gentry, who retired from Evansville, still works in Indianapolis. But he's the one that helped us on our journey, like with an unknown egg donor. That's the route we went. And then we ended up moving over to Griffin because Gentry retired. But yeah, that diagnosis was hard. It was definitely like and you may relate to this. I vividly remember like just seeing like black silhouettes of children. Like I couldn't put faces to them, you know, just like, it was just like, I don't know if it was like dreams I was having or whatever. It was just like, I can't see the faces. Like I can't see faces like of children. I just see just blank silhouettes of like nothingness. And it was just like, it was kind of dark, you know, it was a dark place to be in because you can't fill in that. You're like, what am I looking at here?
Well, and it's just like, for me, even though I knew before that it was going to be difficult, that it was unlikely. I knew about, you know, the issues I had had with like female things. But there was something about like the sitting down and being told that was the
confirmation.
But for me, it was like numb. It's because you have all these like dreams and hopes and like expectations of what you thought was going to be. And then it's just like in a moment's time, that's like taken from you.
Absolutely.
I mean, I will never forget. Like I can see that office. Like I can remember like what was behind his desk sitting in that room, you know?
It is wild.
So it is wild. That moment.
Yeah. And, same for me. So like when we went to Nashville to get like my formal diagnosis, that was the day before my birthday. It's on my stepdad's birthday. And, I remember, this is actually funny looking back. Zach and I were on the way home. We were driving. We were probably on the highway, but I had the window down because I was like kind of hyperventilating. I was like having a panic attack. And I just looked out the window and I just was bawling. And that song, "All That She Wants Is Another Baby," came on. And I just was like
literally, "All That She Wants Is a Baby."
Literally, yeah, I was already bawling. And then that's I just started crying.
Yeah.
You know, because it was
the
like
irony
so
of, like, the whole thing.
Ironic. And I was angry and it was hilarious, but it was sad. And I mean, and then, you know, I remember.
I will never listen to that song different. Like the same.
And, oh my gosh. And Zach has like, and please don't anybody be mad, Zach, he's like, in a funny way, put that on before, you know, again for me later. And I just laughed so hard. I'm like, that is so funny that that came on right now. In the worst moment, but it's funny to look back on. But I remember after that, like I cried so hard on the way home, and then I was like, all right, I'm done. Let's figure out what we're gonna do, you know. And I just like pulled up my bootstraps or whatever they say, you know. So anyway, so after your diagnosis, like how did you decide to move forward with adoption? Like,
well, we had, I mean, I will say that before we had the diagnosis and when we knew, like during those, like before Dr. Griffin like sat us down and told us that, we had already started talking about like, okay, if this doesn't work, if what we think we're going to be told is what we're told, like what does that look like? And Matt and I had both talked about how adoption had been something that we had thought about in our lives anyway. And so, I mean, so when we were told that, I mean, it was immediately like, okay, this is what we're doing. Like there was no question. Like, I think one of the things that we really had to think through, it was more difficult for me to think through than Matt. Matt was foster care or private adoption. And we ultimately decided that foster care wasn't for us because I do think people who choose to be foster parents are like a special kind of angel. For us, we just knew that emotionally that was maybe something that we didn't want to have to navigate as terrible. And we had a lot of judgment from people about that, to be honest with you.
I hate to hear that.
But yeah, I mean, it was a pretty quick decision for us. But then it was just like, okay, we want to do this, but like, how the heck do you do this? Cause it's not, we didn't really know anybody at that time, who had done it, in recent years or at least domestically. So just trying to figure all that out. What about y'all?
Yeah, I think we talked about both routes. Like we asked about like what our options were, like when we were there, you know, I got that diagnosis and, I had never heard about an egg donor. Obviously I never even had to think about it. You know, I was young and like, just thought I'd get pregnant, you know, I never knew I would have issues, you know? And so we looked at that and started researching that, but we also like talked about adoption. Zach was more hesitant and like needed to learn about adoption a little bit more. And then when we looked at like an egg donor and the idea that, you know, oh, he would get to pass on his genetics and I could carry, and that seemed like just a special thing. And so that's what we decided to do. And of course it was really important to us after a while. Like at first I had no clue what an egg donor was. I didn't know any of the like potential emotional ramifications of the resulting children. Like I didn't know any, you don't think of any of that stuff. You know, you just think of like, I want a kid, you know, selfishly you're thinking about yourself at that time. So I did, before we went that route, I did do a lot of research and realized that maybe choosing a donor that could be a part of our children's life was a better option. for the children. And so, yeah, a sorority sister of mine, you know, we've talked about that before, maybe on here, I think. But yeah, a sorority sister of mine donated to us, and she's a super special part of our life, and I wouldn't change it, you know, for anything. So what was one of the most difficult parts of your journey? Like at any point, I know that's so hard because there's like so many different like points, but you can, you know,
can I have two?
Yeah. You can have as many as you want. There's so many parts. Don't limit.
I'm going to have three actually. I might have multiple. So
don't limit.
One was, specifically with adoption is just not knowing like what the heck we were supposed to do.
Yeah.
Fortunately for us, my mom had a friend from church who had just adopted, in Kentucky, like through, Adoption Assistant, which is the home study agency that we use. So that was really helpful, for us just to even just start that process. The second thing was, I don't know what the word I want to use here is, like measuring our expectations or like, so my mom's friend who had adopted, like they got home study approved and got picked and had a baby within, like from starting the home study process to having, it was like 7 months total to baby in arms. And I remember saying to Matt, like, that's quicker than if we were going to have a baby. Like, this is great. Like, this is exactly what I want.
So you're comparing to their
approaching
journey.
40. Yeah. And so then when we were, so then I guess like the other part of that that was really just hard for me specifically is I'm a control freak and I'm the most impatient person in the world. And so we got home study approved in, I think it was May of 2020, because, you know, we would have been home study approved more quickly, but then COVID happened.
Yeah.
It was like a terrible time
of course,
to be going through this process.
Horrible time.
We got approved in May of 2020. We did not get matched with Asher's birth mom until November of 21. So like a year and a half later, almost exactly a year and a half later.
Yeah.
And so during that time, that whole time, we're like putting in for cases, which means that we were presenting our profile book for birth mothers to
consider.
And every time it was just like rejection.
Yeah.
It's really like, in the beginning, like every single, like you can't help but get your hopes up and think like, this is it. Like the description that they've given of this birth mother and what she's looking for. Like, it's like, who wouldn't pick us? We're like amazing. And so just like dealing with that rejection. And then the other thing I would say is just the finances of it.
Oh yeah.
I mean, our adoption, we spent about $48,000. And let me tell you, we are not rich people by any means. And that wasn't money that we had like stowed away. Mm-hmm. We had to fundraise for that. And we were very, very fortunate to have a lot of very generous people in our life who believed that we should be parents and wanted to help us. So, I mean,
absolutely.
There's lots of difficult parts, but those are probably four of the main ones that I can think about.
Stand out to you.
And for the Smiths.
Let's see. First, I think I had to grieve the loss of passing on my genetics.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was the very first thing that was like, that's it. This is the end of who I am genetically. Mm-hmm. Like, I will not go on in that way. And, you know, that's something that still comes up, oddly, although I would never change who my kids are ever in this whole entire world. They were meant to be mine. But, yeah, that is something that you have to grieve. And then, financially it's horrible. And you do, I also did fundraisers. Like we did like a garage sale. It was like, every man's trash is another man's treasure. And we had people like donate their garage sale items so we could have one massive one. And that was a huge success. And then we have generous family members and friends that were similar. They wanted, you know, they saw that we really should be parents or whatever, and they supported us. But so that part was hard, and you have to humble yourself, you know, for help or whatever. And then I'd say, the process itself, like, the medication that I had to take, the shots, I mean, thousands and thousands of shots have gone into my body. And, then, whenever you do go through this process, you have a 2-week wait, like you do the embryo transfer, and then you have a 2-week wait of like, am I pregnant or not? And it is one of the most grueling times. Even I just did this process for the fifth time, mm-hmm. and it is still just so mentally challenging to get through. You take a pregnancy, like for me, not everybody does this, but like some people for that 2 week wait, they do not test at all and they wait for their blood work. Mm-hmm. That ain't me. Okay. It wouldn't be you like, either. I'd be like, I need to know right away. I want to get to the grieving process if it didn't work. That's just how I am. So I'm literally like 3 days after, which is so silly. That's silly. You're not going to get a positive 3 days after. Start peeing on a stick.
Yeah.
And so then you start obsessing, mm-hmm. you know, for 2 weeks. You're like, it's not getting darker. You know, and you just, it's mentally taxing on you.
You want to be excited, but like, you don't want to be excited.
Very hesitant.
You don't want.
And honestly, I mean, I'm 17 weeks tomorrow and I'm still hesitant. This is my third kid. I'm still uneasy until I have this baby in my arms. I'm very, I'm kind of distant a little bit. It's very odd. It's an odd thing. But I just am scared, you know. It's just a lot of stuff that I've had to go through to have these pregnancies. And anybody that loses a pregnancy, whether it was easy or not, losing a pregnancy is horrible. But yeah, whenever you feel like I've spent so much money, I've done all these shots, I've taken all this medication, I would be so upset, you know?
Yeah.
And that's happened before. The first two tries, it happened for us. But anyway, so the process itself and maybe even like what I just said, like getting pregnant I don't take a breath. Like I said, I'm still kind of, I know a lot of people, like when they're pregnant, they're like, oh, I'm so bonded. You know, like I don't bond until like they're here. Cause I'm so scared. I keep them at arm's length. It sounds like so cold, but like, it's like a protecting myself or something. I don't know. I don't know. I think those are probably the most difficult parts, I guess. I guess that's it.
What was the best way for Zach to support you through this as your hubby?
He was so awesome because, like, he is so chill. Like, he's such, like, a cool, like, in some ways he's not, but, like, he is so, like, just, like, it's all going to be okay.
Yeah.
He's just like that kind of, you know, and that's what he would literally say to me. He was so calm. Like, I can't imagine, like, I'm thinking about some of the guys I would have dated, like they would not have handled this. Mm-hmm. Like he's accepting of like, we had to use another woman's like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's other men that would be like, I don't know that I can be with you if I can't have a child. Like they would be so weirded out by this and like maybe not be supportive and like make me feel inadequate or less than. And I mean, he was just like, this is great. It's our kids. It's fine. You know, whatever. Just so supportive and so calm. And that's what I needed. I needed him. I mean, he would literally say to me like, it's going to be okay. Like we're going to figure this out. It's going to be okay. And that was literally, that's all I needed to hear. And then I would take a deep breath and be like, oh, you're right.
Yeah.
He's still that way. So what about you?
Probably the exact same, to be honest with you, because I think you and I are very similar.
Yeah, we get hyped up.
Yes. Hyped up. I'm a worrier.
Yes.
Like I'm anxious. I was getting upset. Like he was just such a good balance of like rationality.
Yes.
And like the things are going to work out. Like Matt has a very strong faith and just really believed like things are going to work out the way that they're supposed. And I really needed to hear that.
Sure.
There were times where that annoyed the crap
out of me.
And I'm like, no, let me rant and rave about how horrible this is and let me wallow in it. And he would allow me the
a little
space
bit of it.
To do that. But then it was sort of like, okay, moving on. Like, and like the best thing that I think Matt did. So in like the summer of 21, we did get picked. We got matched like in a non-traditional way through like a friend of a friend.
Yeah.
And then it didn't work out. So we went from like June or July to like late August, early September. And then eventually that baby was placed with a distant relative of theirs, I think that was probably, Asher's supposed to be our baby. So
of course.
That was very disappointing in that time. And
of course.
We made the decision at that point because we'd been saving money, waiting to get a new house, like all of these things until after, you know, we adopted. And like Matt was like, okay, that's it. Like we're not going to, we have stopped like living our life the way that we wanted to, like moving on.
Not gonna put anything on hold anymore.
And it's funny how like that's when I mean, literally, I tell this story before, so I'm sorry if people have heard it, but like the day we moved into our new house, like I was literally like, I can see it. I'm like very visual. Like I was standing at the bottom of our steps, had my phone out to Venmo the movers. Andy, what's up? to Venmo him. And my phone started ringing with the number from the adoption agency in Florida that we got Asher through. And it was like, I just remember calling my mom and telling her, and she was like, see what happens when you step out in faith. And I wouldn't have done that if it wasn't for Matt. Like, I think I would have like really just like
wallowed
down, like dug my heels in and be like, we're waiting. And, you know, nothing can happen. But he was really encouraging through that. Yeah. So that was good.
It's annoying whenever you hear people say like, if you just like continue on, like it's going to happen. You know, it's so annoying to hear that. And you're like, okay, whatever.
Well, I mean, yeah. So that's something that, what are things that people have said to you that have been hurtful?
Yeah. There's been two, I will say. I feel like I only had two things. Now, there's been probably been some random things that might like hit me a certain way.
Yeah.
They weren't directly hurtful, but one person called me sinful for the option, like the direction that we went. And that was incredibly hurtful. I mean, you know that I have a big faith and I consider myself a Christian. And so that really hit hard. That really hurt me badly.
I don't really want to give this person like airtime, but like, why were they saying that? Like, what was their thought?
Because of their beliefs, they feel like, that's not like a natural way. Like, using science, I guess, is not okay. Also they have, I think like 7 kids now. So it was easy for them, you know,
so they have no idea.
It's so hard, for them to know like what it's like to go through or what choices they would make, in that situation, because they have had such an easy time and they have a big family. And honestly, like, it was hurtful. I try to look at like, he felt like he was doing the right. Yeah,
he
exactly.
Felt like
there you go. Hello.
You go.
Yeah.
I'm done.
He felt like he was like doing, I know this is an odd way to look at it. I really always try to give people the benefit of the doubt.
He was doing what he felt
like his faith should, you know what I mean? So like, I don't agree with what he said, but I try to like give the benefit of the doubt. But I did tell him like, no, thank you. Like I do not receive this Yeah, I told him I do not receive that, and thank you for that. If you think you're like saving me or whatever, but I'm gonna move forward.
I'm good,
and I've prayed about it, and I feel at peace about it. So thank you. Moving on. And then another one was a lady that really, 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 really aggressively pushed me, like was trying to push me into adoption after she already knew the route we were going. It's like, and that was, I love to hear that because she has experience in adoption and it was beautiful, like the story she told me. However, I said like, oh, we already, like this is the direction we're going. And it like continued and like still trying to like, to change our direction. And that was really hurtful for me too, because I felt like she felt like we were going a wrong direction.
And
this is our direction that we're going. You know, that was your direction. This is our direction we're going. And so that hurt my feelings too, because I'm like, how about you just say, I'm looking forward to seeing how your story.
I love an unsolicited opinion, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, and it was 100% non-solicited. And I just wish it would have just been like, I can't wait to see how your story unfolds.
Yeah.
That's all I needed to hear. That's it. You know?
Yeah.
Although I do, I did like to hear about other people's like choices and why they chose the way they did. But like at that point I was deep into the direction we're going.
You're like, that's good for you. I'm glad that,
I'm glad that worked out. So what about you?
For ours, I can just remember when we first met with our home study social worker, shout out girl, that, one of the things she told us was that if, you know, fundraising is obviously something that you're going to need to do, you need to be very public and open with your story. And I was very uncomfortable with that. And it turned out to be like one of the best things we did, because so many people wanted to come beside us in that journey, but it did open us up to people wanting to tell us. So like, I can remember very distinctly, we sold some t-shirts, our Love Everybody Always shirts.
I love that,
And Chad at WBKR did a story, and the comments, I should not click on social media comments, but, there were all sorts of people in there. Well, they wouldn't have to raise money if they were going to do the foster care route. If they really wanted to be parents, they would do foster care.
I wonder how many of them are foster parents.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I mean, so those kind of things. And then this is a comment that I still get sometimes, and I know people don't intend for it to be hurtful, but it stings still a little bit, is like, especially when we were in that process. Well, I know as soon as you adopt, you're going to get pregnant.
Oh my goodness.
And you know, so-and-so, as soon as they, you know, started the adoption process, they got pregnant, and it was just like, can you please just like not discount like what the doctors told me,
right?
Like, I'm going to believe science more than I'm going to believe you, you know, believe you, Susan, or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
About that. And then, because it was just still sort of like, so then you're going to be able to like have your real kid, like is how it felt.
Or absolutely. So. Yeah.
And then since we've had Asher, you know, we have an open adoption. Mm-hmm. We have relationships with his birth parents, mm-hmm. and even one set of his birth grandparents. And people have said some pretty hurtful things about them and the choices that they've made, and some very judgmental things. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I could go way into that.
That is wild.
Just a lack of understanding about that relationship and why we would want to have that open relationship with him. And so
it's amazing.
I have to really trust you to tell you about her, about who they are, because people are so judgmental. Because like, all I really want people to know about her and him, his birth father, is that they made what I consider like one of the most selfless choices that they could make.
Amen.
They loved Asher, and what he will always know is they loved him enough, mm-hmm. to want to choose a family that could provide the life they thought he deserved.
Absolutely.
And so
there's no greater love than that. It gives me chills.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's no greater love than that, for sure.
Yeah.
So what have you learned about yourself through this process?
I'm the most impatient person in the world.
Yeah.
I'm a control freak, but ultimately we really don't have any control, right? It's like that whole like make plans, God laughs sort of thing. So I mean, that year and a half of waiting that's been the hardest year and a half of my entire life. And through COVID and like the professional stuff, like COVID was very hard for me professionally on top of that. That has been, I guess, the biggest lesson I've learned is that I need to trust and have more faith. I literally, my middle name is Faith, Rebecca Faith McQueen. I have faith tattooed on my wrist, but I wasn't really practicing that.
Sure.
And so that has been probably the biggest thing I needed to learn was
it's
just
hard
to, like,
to
let go.
It really is.
To let go and trust.
You're in the thick of it. It's really hard to.
For you?
Yeah. The thing I learned about myself was that I'm a make it happen kind of gal. Like, mm-hmm. if something gets in my way, I'm going to go ahead and move around it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, it's in my
Almost
way.
Girl Health learned that about Tracy Naylor. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So that I definitely like was like, whoa, okay. I'm not going to let anything stop me. I'm going to figure it out in my own way. And so I'm proud of myself in that, and like the resilience in that. What's some advice you would give somebody that's going through infertility right now? That's so hard. I don't even know. I mean,
gosh, I should have thought about that question more.
Tough.
You go first. What would you say?
I don't know. I have lots of, it just depends on, I guess, where they are. But this advice I have given before, I think is sometimes a hard pill to swallow for women going to it, or women that are in the thick of it. So sometimes I'm hesitant to give it. So I guess forgive me if it hurts. Try to find joy, like, in other people's celebration and successes. I know it's so hard. Like, I went to the baby showers and I chose not to go to some of the baby showers, you know, and in some of them I was very uncomfortable and like, wow, I wish this was me. And I felt all those feelings, but like, then I tried to like step back and be like, okay, I pray that this is me one day. Mm-hmm. And I pray that, other women will also celebrate with me and be joyful, and then maybe see the hope in my journey. So it's really, 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 really hard. And it's okay if you can't get there right now, but like, I hope that women can like try to find like a little joy in other people. I know it's so hard. Like when you see like the gender reveals and the, like the pictures of the baby showers and all that is so triggering. It can be so hurtful and heartbreaking and all that, but, just like unfollow or like, you know, like mute if you need to, like, you know, whatever you need to do to like, to help your mental health, but also maybe like try to like, hey, you know what? that's gonna be mean.
Treat them the way that you would want to be treated in the same situation.
Yeah, that might be mean one day. And also remember that that person might have also had a really hard time getting pregnant. So like celebrate with them because you don't know what their story is. Now some people will be like, I didn't even plan this, and that can hit hard too, right? That can hit really hard too, and that's okay. Like you should be able to feel whatever feelings you're feeling, especially in the thick of it. But remembering that, like, you don't know everybody's story. They could have really went through the ringer also, and now they're like celebrating.
Yeah, don't make assumptions. Know? Like, assume.
Yeah. So, but that's really hard. I know, and I mean, I definitely had dark times where I was like, man, what? Like that person, you know? So I get it. And it's hard. It's a hard balance, but
I think now that listening you talk, you just like have enlightened me, Jackie. No, I think the two things I would say is one, feel your feelings.
Feel your feelings.
It sucks. Yeah. Like I had, there's a woman it's that hard. I'm friends with it's right dark. Now who's going through, and she texted me earlier and said, we've put in for 3 cases over the last week and we haven't been picked. And I'm like, people used to tell me like, it's going to work out. And I saw on the other side of that, like, I can tell you that that's true, but I also would wanted to punch somebody like me in the face.
Because
I know it sucks and like, let it suck for a little bit.
Yeah.
But leads me to my like second piece of advice is find community.
Mm-hmm.
Small plug for our, Light in the Dark infertility support group. But that is something that I wish I had had earlier in our journey.
So true.
I'm a shout out Brooke Arnold, but I will never forget at a church function. Brooke had seen some of our social media posts that somebody had shared, and she sought me out and said, hey, y'all are the Ruarks. You're trying to adopt. We did that. And it was like, I hadn't known anybody at that point like that, who had been through a similar process. And just to have that person who knew what I was going through, who knew what it felt like to put in for cases or what. So anyway, I would just say, seek out community. If you live in Owensboro, we do meet on the first Thursday of every month at Owensboro Christian.
It's been beautiful to see how people feel supported. They're showing up.
And to see like the different, like there's no, like for any fertility thing, right? Like there's no story in that room that's the exact same. Nope. Everybody's on different stages of their journey.
Yeah. Some have kids, some don't. Yeah.
Yeah. Some are going through IUI or,
IVF, adoption. Yeah.
I mean, there's all sorts of, or just it's taking longer than they thought to get, there's all, and so that has been really, we can just sit in that room and talk about what sucks, but then also encourage each other. And so that would be wherever you are to find community and find people who understand that you can talk to, because not everybody understands.
And no, you're right. And you kind of reminded me that like, whenever I got my diagnosis, premature ovarian failure, I went on Facebook and found groups. There wasn't very many, but there was a few groups that I joined. And I think that was huge for me too, because I was like, what is this? Like, what am I going to deal with here? And, you know, unfortunately my diagnosis has like other ramifications, like health wise. And so it's not just infertility.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that I'm going to have to deal with the rest of my life. It's not like, oh, once I have kids, like I'm done. No, that's not what it is.
Right.
And there's a lot of people like that, you know, have to deal with like the health related aspects of it. Afterwards, obviously the infertility part sucks, but there's other things, you know, but finding a group that maybe has your specific diagnosis or like unexplained fertility or PCOS or, and being able to like bounce ideas and ask questions. And I had one, girl that helped me, and she used a known donor, and her name is Elise, and she's in like England or I can't even remember. It's been a while now.
But she
that's
has
terrible.
A magical accent
but
wherever she is.
Well, and I don't know. We've never talked like that, but we have so many Facebook messages back and forth where she supported me through those 2-week windows and like letting me obsess over my pregnancy test with her and sending her pictures. And she's like, no, the progression looks good. You know, and I mean, she was incredible. So you're right. Finding somebody that can relate in some way.
You don't have
story.
To be alone through any of it.
No.
Even though it can feel very alone. Like there's, even if it's just us.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if you're listening to this podcast,
reach out
to us for sure.
And you don't have to share publicly, but you can find your community like privately too. Yeah.
100%.
So what kind of advice would you give to like the friends and family of the person that are going through infertility?
Man.
Oh, it's a toughie, isn't it?
I guess one, just listen. Listen without trying to fix it.
You're so right.
I mean, but that's like advice for anybody, right? Who's helping anybody go through any sort of issue. But like, my mom, God love her. I do. I love my mom. But like, nobody in my family has had any infertility issues. Like they just pop them out like candy. and so I'm her daughter and she wants to fix it. And so I can just remember having conversations with her and she just wanted to like, well, maybe this or this or this is going to happen. I'm sure everything's going to be fine. And I just needed her to listen.
100%.
And so, and don't tell them that they're going to get pregnant as soon as they stop trying.
Right.
That's another piece of advice. What about you?
I think the same. I think listening and being able to like feel uncomfortable with them, you know, don't avoid them just because you're afraid you might say the wrong thing. Just don't speak. If you're afraid you're going to say the wrong thing, just don't say it, you know, just listen and just, and also like just simply saying, what is the best way for me to support you?
Yeah.
Like how do you feel supported? What do you need from me? And, you know, who knows what that may be? Everybody's different. But I think just simply saying, I've never experienced this. I don't know how to support you. Like, what can I do to be there for you? I think that's huge. And that would go a long way and mean a lot. Even if they say, I don't know, you know, just be there for them. Shoot them a text message. How's your day?
Yeah.
What's going on? Or like, send them a $5, probably has to be a $6 Starbucks card now. I feel like the prices are going up. But like, send them a little, you know, hey, go get coffee on me or something, you know. I don't know. But listening and not offering advice, especially if you don't know what the heck you're talking about, you know?
It's funny how those are the people who usually want to offer most advice.
Oh, my word.
Are the ones who don't
have a clue.
Anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't have a clue what you're going through. And I feel the same way. My mom was an angel through and so supportive and just like a mom, like you're saying, like she wanted to fix it. Like that, I could imagine that's how I would be now looking at my kids. I'm like, I just want to make you happy. I don't want you to be heartbroken. Broken. I don't want you to be sad. And so that's what they're doing, like as a mom. But I do remember her. I'm like, you had three kids, no problem. So like, let's just slow down. But she was amazing. She was so wonderful. She did check me one time. She said like, you're really angry, and I'm glad she pointed that out. And I'm like, you know what, I am angry, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay to feel angry or whatever. And I think she was just worried about me.
Yeah.
She's worried. You know, I'd be worried too about my daughter.
This is going to be a very like adoption specific thing and maybe even open adoption specific thing. That's something my mom and dad have done that I have just really appreciated. And I know not everybody gets this, is it's not about them. Like they have made, like, 100%. Especially with the open stuff and us maintaining a relationship with his birth grandparents, my mom, just because my mom and I talk differently than my dad and I do. And so, but like, she is so like, what are we going to call them? Should we call her Grandma Cheryl?
Aww, inclusive.
Yes. Inclusive. And she just keeps saying, you know, I don't know how I would feel if I had, you know, a grandson out there that somebody else was raising, and just very empathetic to what that is, where I think a lot of people can make it about them and be like, well, no, he's my grandson. Or, and so 100%. That's something that I think my mom has done really well.
That's
and it's,
beautiful.
I think it's outside of like her comfort zone.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because it is something that she's never had
to
like think about or experience, but she was able to empathize with them and put herself in their shoes. And so that has been, I've really just appreciated that.
That's
because
awesome.
I know I just in some of those adoption groups and stuff that I'm in, not everybody gets that experience.
Right.
So that's,
I love that. My mom will often, she forgets. And I mean, honestly, a lot, probably everybody except me.
Yeah.
And maybe Zach occasionally, but like they forget that the girls
like
are, well,
like
I guess
genetically.
They're not genetically related to me. So my mom will occasionally, you know, say the random, and it's not hurtful at all. Please, you know, if anybody's ever said anything, it does not hurt my feelings at all. But you know, like, oh, well, that's kind of like you, but like, it would be like a genetic thing. And I'm like, no, that's, it's just like, oh man, I forgot, you know?
Yeah.
And then like if people like Channing's eyesight, and like I've had people be like, oh, well, like what about like do you have like bad eyesight? I'm like, well, it wouldn't be me. It would be, you know, so and so. I'm not going to say her name, but and it would be Zach, you know. And so it's just funny that people forget. And I get so often, and I think you do too. Like, oh, my gosh,
they look just like you.
And I'm like, huh? Like, of course, I would never correct anybody. That would be uncomfortable for them. But I think it's sweet, you know,
if that's
what they see, that's what they see, you know. And also I went blonde whenever I told my mom, I said, whatever hair color that Channing comes out, I'm going to match her or whatever. Yeah. That's so silly. But, and then I've never gone back. I'm still kind of a little blonde.
I think you look good blonde.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm a dark brunette actually. But I would go back brunette now. I'm very comfortable in like my kids being who they are, yeah, and who I am, and we're all meant to be together. And I was then too. I just like, for some reason, I was like, I'm just going to match whatever they are.
Understandable though.
It was just fun. My mom's a hairdresser, yeah, for crying out loud. I ask Channing all the time, like she'll see pictures of me with dark hair. I'm like, do you like, I'll go back dark. Like it would be easier. And she's like, no. I like you like blonde. Yeah. Like, so and I would already be back brunette if I could, but anyway, funny. It's funny, but yeah. Just a reminder that we do have our infertility group for anybody that feels, you know, like it's something that they could benefit from. And I mean, honestly, I'm kind of like a little uncomfortable in those type of settings. So like, if you feel like you're kind of introverted and like uncomfortable, like it's so laid back, mm-hmm, and like you don't have to share if you don't want to. You can give a brief like, I'm just not there yet, just or like to, I'm just here to listen. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you do not have to say anything. You can listen. You can say everything. We've seen it all, and we've seen lots of really beautiful friendships come out of it. Mm-hmm. We've seen people that like you and I, and I'm sure Sarah and Brooke have been able to support privately. Like, yep, they reach out to us, like text message us. So yeah, we'd love to have you all. It's the first Thursday of every month. At Owensboro Christian,
is entrance A.
It's like, mm-hmm, like the overhang, and we would meet
over on
you.
The lift.
Yeah, we would meet you outside or whatever, walk you in, and we'd love to have you. And of course, we're always here for you if you just want to talk like one on one.
Yep, so definitely.
Yeah. All right.
I guess, should I say Happy National Infertility Awareness Week? Is that like what you say?
Coming up. I guess. Yeah. I mean, but I don't know that it's happy.
Right. Yeah. I know. I'm like, it's like,
it just is what it is.
But, yeah.
But we're here, you know.
But yeah, I appreciate the awareness.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.